Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. I am Bill Arnold. I am awfully delighted for this time we get to spend together. I've been thinking about you today, and if you just climbed into your car and missed any of hour one, it was a great hour of discussion with Rob Bluey and then Colin Hansen. He's written a new book called Lost and Found, which looks really, really good. And this hour, we're going to get Dr. Paul Meyer for the whole hour. And you know what that means. Lots of questions. Get your questions ready. You know, the mind's an interesting thing, and nobody seems to know it better than Dr. Meyer. And it's interesting the way the mind works. And if you have had maybe depression or anxiety, and maybe it's been a part of your life for as long as you can remember, there might be a very good reason for that. He's written a book called Blue Jeans. We're not talking about the kind that, Gloria Vanderbilt made, the kind of genes that are in your DNA and the way you were made and created. And your family and the ways in which you got things passed on from your family. And we're going to talk about that, and we're going to open up the phone lines and also take text questions, 877-933-2484. And that's all ahead with Dr. Paul Meyer. We'll take 60 seconds and bring him on.
Traveling outside the Faith Radio listening area doesn't mean you have to miss your favorite show. In fact, you can listen to Faith Radio live anytime or access past programs by downloading the free Faith Radio app. Just search iTunes or Google Play for Faith Radio and download the free app to any connected device. Enjoy a crystal clear, static-free signal through the free Faith Radio app today.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey. Faith Radio.
It brings a balance into my wife's and my lives that other people, unfortunately, are missing. So we like to share with others and tell them to get in there and listen to something good for a change.
We're connecting faith and life together. Faith Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Dr. Paul Meyer is an MD, psychiatrist, also an ordained minister, founder of the Meyer Clinics. And he's authored, maybe 100 books, give or take 20. And he's just one of my favorite guests. When I get him on, I'm just thinking, we're helping so many people with so many good questions. I already see them coming up online. So let's welcome him back. Paul, how are you?
Yeah, doing fantastic. And I always enjoy doing these programs with you.
Well, I know you did a call-in radio show for years, didn't you, on your own?
Yeah, I did one for about 25 years to an average of 2 million people a day in 400 cities.
That is a nice gig.
Live.
Yeah.
Live radio. it was a lot of fun. We'd show up a few minutes before it started and not even know what topic we were going to do yet, and then we'd pick one out, but we'd talk for about 5 or 10 minutes about it, because that's all we had to do was kick it off, and then we took live calls, for an hour every day.
That's really fun. That's really fun and very helpful for people. So I'm curious, would you talk about the difference between depression and anxiety?
Sure. Depression is when we feel... Well, it's not just sadness. We all feel sad, and you're supposed to. The Bible says if you see somebody grieving, go grieve with them, cry with them. Grieve with those who grieve and rejoice with those who rejoice. But depression is when you get, from a psychiatrist's point of view here, from a Christian psychiatrist, depression is when the sadness is so severe that that you have trouble functioning, you have severe emotional pain, you may have death wishes just because even though you're the type that would never do that, but when the chemicals get depleted, so you have a clinical depression, then even suicide seems like a logical way to escape. And you wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep. So that's depression. That's a serious depression. Now, there's some people that inherit what we call dysthymia, where they're just always sadder than their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's depression too, even though it's not severe like the previous one I talked about. Anxiety is different than fear. You know, if you have a big bill you got to pay tomorrow and you're $100 short and you're embarrassed to ask your brother or somebody for the $100, you know, then that's fear, you know.
Right.
But anxiety is when you feel like fear, but you don't know why. It just appears out of nowhere. And anxiety is a fear of finding out the truth about our own thoughts, feelings, and motives.
Mm.
And so a lot of our thoughts and feelings and motives and things like that are out of our awareness. They're buried. Like if I had some buried anger toward my wife or colleague or somebody, and I was too embarrassed to be aware of it, I could suppress it unconsciously, not on purpose, but bury it and not know it's there. But then when it threatens to emerge, you know, I might see a TV show where somebody gets angry or something, and all of a sudden I feel real anxious, and I don't know why, but it might be because it's threatening to emerge. And when it does, then I can go ahead and deal with it. And, you know, a couple of neat verses, Bible verses that talk about that are in Hebrews 4:22. It says we should meditate on Scripture regularly. And my mom taught me to do that when I was 10, and I'm 74 now. I've done it almost every day since age 10. But the reason to meditate on Scripture is because the Word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than a two-edged sword, and it'll reveal to you your innermost thoughts that you don't see. So that's, you know, that people don't like the word unconscious because, you know, I guess, you know, it wasn't really Freud who invented that word, but the Bible talked about it 2,000 years before he ever thought of it. And then in Psalm 139, a beautiful psalm, where, you know, it says God designed you in your mother's womb, and he's the one that gave us certain strengths and weaknesses, including blue jeans sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And with one arm he hugs us and another arm he leads us. But at the end of that psalm, David prayed a prayer. He said, God, search my innermost thoughts and reveal them to me so that I can walk in a way that's pleasing to you. So David was saying, I have innermost thoughts that I don't see. And so reveal them to me. Help me to see what they are so I can grow, you know, and walk in a way that's more pleasing to you. The more we see the truth about what's inside of us, the more control we have over our lives instead of letting our unconscious factors control us.
Mm-hmm. Paul, if you were suffering with a little bit of depression or anxiety and I was your friend and I said, God, Paul, why don't you just don't think those thoughts, just meditate on Scripture, would I be loving and kind or would I be a little bit misguided?
If you said it that way, you might be loving and kind and a little bit misguided.
That's just like me.
because I know you well enough to know if you said that to me, it'd be out of concern.
Right.
It wouldn't be unloving. But if you just tell somebody, well, read the Bible every day and everything will be okay. And for some people that, you know, we see it, let's put it this way. We see 1,000 people a day at our clinics nationwide. We have a national chain. And about half of them are for depression, but in about 75%, so 3 out of 4, get over their depression and anxiety or whatever else they're suffering from just with Christian counseling and no medication. But then some people have a temporary problem that's so severe that taking medications for a few months will speed up their recovery so they don't have to miss college or miss work, and then they get off them. And then, but about 20% of the population inherit some brain chemical. You know, there's about 4 or 5 that are really important,
mm-hmm.
They can inherit a low level of one of those, just like you can inherit a low level of thyroid and need thyroid medication, or inherit diabetes and need insulin.
Mm-hmm.
And so, about 20% of the population will inherit one chemical or another that's low, and they will stay depressed or anxious or extremely shy or whatever that chemical is their whole lives, or obsessive compulsive disorder is another good example. They'll remain that way their whole lives, and they can read the Bible all day, every day. They can get Christian counseling 6 hours a day for 20 years, and they will not improve. They won't get it, won't make them any better because they have a biochemical problem. Just like reading the Bible every day wouldn't make your diabetes go away.
Right.
You know,
right.
Diabetes. You know, something interesting. I did a Sunday school class about a month ago, and the class, it was at a different church, and they wanted me to speak on heaven and the New Jerusalem. And so when I studied up on it in Revelation, you know, the last few chapters, especially the New Jerusalem, there's going to be a river of water coming in the New Jerusalem. It's going to be like 1,500 miles long, 1,500 miles tall, and, you know, have like, you know, 900,000 floors or something. I forgot, you know, but anyway, the New Jerusalem is going to have a river flowing from Jesus' throne down it, and right near the top of it, Revelation says there's going to be 12 types of trees are going to be planted, and the New Jerusalem is going to float up over the earth during the thousand-year reign. Now, I know there's people listening that don't even know, you know, they don't even, you know, believe in times the way I do. But mm-hmm. I'm just saying that, you know, it's going to be floating over the old Jerusalem. And I believe those of us who have been raptured and, you know, we'll live up there, but we'll come down and help the normal earthlings that will be living down here for 1,000 years. And it says those 12 trees, they'll use the leaves from those 12 trees to produce medication to help heal the nations, for the healing of the nations. And so even when Jesus is ruling for 1,000 years, he's not going to have Christians go around waving a magic wand and make their illnesses go away. They'll still have them. They'll still inherit them. And they'll still need medication until they have new bodies. Now, you and I won't need any. You know, we'll have perfect bodies because we'll be raptured.
Mm-hmm.
The normal earthlings that are still here when we come down and take over at the Battle of Armageddon. And well, we don't need to get into all that. We could do a whole – I could do a 20 hours of shows on end times. I love it. I study it a lot.
I love it, too. I would love to do end times with you someday. That would be fascinating, although there's so many things to talk to you about. And I want to open up our lines. Some listeners are already chiming in. If you have a question about depression or anxiety, we have got the man to talk to. Dr. Paul Myers with us today. So let's get the phone lines going, 877-933-2484. You know you can, of course, be anonymous, 877-933-2484, or you can send a text, and I will ask the question on your behalf. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Paul Myers, my guest. It's been too long since he's been on. It's nice to have him back. He's a MD, a psychiatrist, ordained minister. He kind of does it all. He's written close to 100 books. Is that about right, Paul, about 100?
It's over 100 now. I lost track, but I think it's about 105 or 106.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sold 8 million copies in 30 languages.
Congratulations. Here's a question from a listener. Can you change your genetics if prone to anxiety and depression? Is there any strategies for that?
You can't change your genetics, but you can take a medication that corrects it. Let me give you an example. I saw a patient who was born extremely, extremely shy, even though his brothers and sisters weren't. And from birth on, he was just that way. You know, he was raised the same as the rest of the kids and everything. And he couldn't even join Boy Scouts or anything like that. You know, I mean, he'd go to church and sit in the back row and things, but he never, you know, had the courage to ask a girl for a date. He ended up getting married because some woman proposed to him. And but he was real smart, and he ended up becoming a successful businessman and owned his own large business here in Dallas. But he never interacted with the customers or with the employees. He'd sit in his back office, and because he was so extremely shy, it was hard for him to even go to a grocery store. But he heard me talking about this on the radio. And so his wife drug him in here to see me. and when you're born with that, for example, that's a GABA problem. Gamma aminobutyric acid is a real common chemical that God put a whole bunch of it in our brains to put the brakes on our worries.
Mm-hmm.
And his GABA just wasn't working right. And I put him on a medication that makes it work right. And 4 days later, he was normal for the first time
wow.
in 40 years. And he was able to go to his kids' soccer games. He was able to go out and mingle with customers and mingle with his employees. And he was totally normal as though he never inherited that because I just gave him a medication that corrected the right chemical.
Yeah, now you've talked about GABA before, Paul, and I would love for you to say more about that. And I'm curious, is it can it be a supplement at a health food store, or does it need to be something that comes from a doctor like yourself?
There are some supplements that say they're GABA, and they might be, you know, and I know there's some in my book Blue Jeans on in chapter 10 it tells different foods that'll produce each of the main brain chemicals, and I don't remember which ones produce GABA, but maybe that'll make people buy the book.
Of course.
But there's certain foods that will produce GABA in our brains that would help. But none of that would help nearly as much as a strong medication. And medication's not addicting or anything. The medication I use is actually Neurontin, mm-hmm. which there's probably a lot of people listening to us right now that take it for pain. You know, if you have chronic pain, you know, back pain or different things like that, lots of times the doctor will give you Neurontin just to help with chronic pain. So if somebody with chronic pain was also very shy, the pain would not only go away, but they quit being shy, wouldn't know why.
Yeah. Wow.
Get rid of anxiety, too.
Yeah. All right, I got a caller on the line who would prefer to remain anonymous. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello.
Hi there. You have a question for Dr.
Hi.
Meyer.
Yes, I just would like to know how you would know if it is your genes that is causing family anxiety. My biggest problem is not being able to relax, like to go to sleep. So I am on Klonopin, which doctors don't like to give you. So I'm wondering, how would I know if it's if it's a gene thing? I've never been tested, and I've gone to a psychiatrist, and they never said anything about testing. So I guess the bottom line is, how do you know what it is?
Well, you know, right now we have to guess. They're working on it. I think within maybe 3 years or four, we'll be able to draw a drop of blood from somebody that comes in like yourself and run a genetic test. And there are some genetic tests now that show what medications work best. But run a test and it'll say, you have the inherited type. This type of anxiety that's inherited and it's on this such and such a chromosome, or it would say, no, it's not genetic at all. It's due to the way you were brought up or due to other factors. Probably most people that are anxious, I would guess it's not genetic, but in some people it is. But regardless of whether it is or not, I get people that come in here that have had panic attacks, for example, for 30 straight years. And when I see them, I say, well, you know what? After 6 o'clock tonight, you're not going to have any more the rest of your life. And they think I'm crazy. They think I'm lying. They say, well, I've had them 30 years. How can you get rid of them in a couple hours? And I would give them something like Klonopin, like you just said, clonazepam, temporarily. It's better. It's mildly addicting. I would only use it. I usually would only use it temporarily, but it would get rid of it immediately, you know, if you take the right dose. But then I'd give them something that's not addicting, like a separate GABA medicine. And anxiety is a GABA problem, and that's why God uses GABA to put brakes on our worries. So I'd give them something like Lamictal or Lamotrigine. If I were treating you here in Dallas, I would start you on a medicine. The generic name is Lamotrigine, Lamotrigine, and you start at a low dose, and it might be a month before it would work really good. But in a month, if you took it the rest of your life, and you might not need to, but if you took it, as long as you took it, you'd have no significant anxiety. You could not have a panic attack if you tried to. It also eliminates physical pain if you have any. And it helps irritability, and if somebody's got bipolar, it takes away the bipolar. It doesn't make it go away permanently. If you quit the medicine, then those things come back. But in the meantime, I would want you to get some good Christian counseling and figure out if there's things inside of you that are eating away at you. And the nicest people often get the most anxiety, because if a jerk gets angry, he or she just lets it out, you know. But if a really nice, conscientious person has anger on the inside toward somebody or toward themselves or toward God, and they feel guilty about it, you know, and then they might bury it, and then it might show up in the form of anxiety. So I would, if you're, you know, suffering a lot of anxiety and it's causing you not to sleep, things, I would give you medications temporarily and have you get counseling and see if the counseling made it go away. And if it's not genetic, then it would go away from the counseling. If you have a family history of it and there's other factors that would make me guess that it's genetic, then I would just have you take something like Lamictal the rest of your life, which is totally safe to do, and it's not addicting or anything. But the Klonopin that you're taking right now is a great medicine. If you're not taking, you know, more than, you know, a couple of milligrams a day, it works fine. But it's better to get on something that's not addicting at all, and then just use that for emergencies.
I hope that answered your question.
Well, I only take it to go to sleep. I am not anxious. I just can't relax. So,
oh, okay.
To sleep.
Yeah, you take it every night to sleep.
Yeah.
So, yes. What is it, like half a milligram or something? Or a milligram? Do you know the dose?
You know, I think it's 0.5, and I do take
two of them.
So,
that's no big deal.
I have been on it for many years.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt you. That's fine. That little bit, you know, it just helps your mind to quit racing so you can sleep. And there's nothing, you could take that the rest of your life, that tiny amount, and it's not going to hurt you.
Well, thank you for calling. I sure appreciate it. That's an interesting position that I am hearing from her, that she just has difficult sleeping, which is, I think, for a lot of people have that. A lot of people have that problem.
Yeah.
And I wonder, when you lay your head on the pillow, if you sometimes just have a flood of anxious thoughts that keep you up.
And some people, lots of times that part is genetic, because the more, that's a different thing, serotonin. You know, if your serotonin is low, then you become more obsessive compulsive and perfectionistic, and you want to plan. And people that are that way are usually a lot more successful than people that aren't that way, you know, but they might enjoy it less. But they climb in bed at night, and they're already planning what they're going to do the next day. And instead of just turning it off and going to sleep in 5 minutes, they may lay there for half an hour or an hour trying to fall asleep. And so sometimes, you know, medication can just shut that down.
Yeah.
Relaxing.
Let's get the phone lines going. 877-933-2484. If you have a question for Dr. Paul Meyer, you can also send a text. I'll ask the question on your behalf. 877-933-2484. If you have a question about depression, anxiety, or anything from your family history that maybe you're concerned about in terms of your mental health, let us know what it is. We will do our best to answer that question. Again, the number is 877-933-2484. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Paul Meyer is my guest, and the phone lines have lit up. We just got to get to our first caller. Here's a question from a listener. Paul, if you're anxious and depressed and taken an SSRI and feel better, would that suggest that you do have a chemical imbalance, or does everyone feel better with an SSRI?
Very good question. It does imply that you were depressed, because, I'll try to explain I have a tendency to go way too long explaining things, but I'm going to try to make it short and sweet. We eat tryptophan in our diets, you know, like apple. If you eat a banana tonight, it's one of the highest foods in tryptophan. Actually, chocolate has tryptophan in it too, a happy chemical. But anyway, you eat tryptophan, And B6 carries it in the brain. The brain turns that into serotonin, S-E-R-O-T-O-N-I-N. And that chemical is what God uses in our brain to give us the fruit of the Spirit, to give us love, joy, peace, patience, good sleep. And then we have 200 billion brain cells with little spaces called synapses between them. And you have reuptake sites that suck up the old serotonin to replace it with the new. And that just keeps it in balance, like your thermostat in your house. And for most people, that works fine. For 20% of people, their reuptake sites suck up too much serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get depleted, and so that makes them depressed and even suicidal or obsessive compulsive disorder and things like that all can result from low serotonin. Now, if a person had a normal in a SSRI is a type of antidepressant it's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And that sounds complicated, but really all it does is it blocks some of those reuptake sites. Like if you had a big sink in your kitchen that had five drains, and so the water is always gone, and you plugged four of them up and left one open to let water out the same rate that you're pouring it in, then it would stay level. So that's what it does. It blocks some of the drains so that you're not depleting too much serotonin. And if somebody's happy, it wouldn't make them any happier. So if a happy person took an antidepressant, it would not make them any happier. But if they're low in serotonin and they have to be eating some tryptophan too, or else the medicine won't work, then it blocks some of the drain so that your serotonin can accumulate to a normal level. And what a person is like on an antidepressant is the real him or her. That's the real you, because that's the real you with your chemicals normal if you wouldn't have inherited a low serotonin. Now, serotonin can get temporarily low if one of your close family members just died, or you found out, you know, you have to struggle with cancer, and I went through that 2 years ago and went through radiation, and I'm okay now, but it was, you know, it's somewhat of a stress, but different things can get you upset or stressed out and temporarily deplete serotonin and make you depressed, and if it's not too severe depression, then just counseling and things like that will make it correct itself, but it can take several months. Whereas taking an SSRI could make you feel a lot better in a month, but you still need to get some Christian counseling to deal with what it is that's eating away at you. Mark Twain said, it's not what you eat that gives you indigestion, it's what's eating you. And so yeah. some people get a low serotonin because of stress and things like that don't inherit it, and then some people get a low serotonin because they did inherit it. And people come to our day program, for example, from your states out there in the North Country where I grew up, they come here from all over, and they stay in a hotel nearby, or we got one in Chicago too, but they come to our clinic for 7 hours a day of counseling. They stay at the hotel at night, but they get 7 hours a day of counseling for about 5 days a week for about 3 weeks, and we just dig and probe.
Wow. It's pretty thorough.
Things and stuff. So we dig up the things that are bothering them on the inside, and so the anxiety goes away, the depression goes away. But we often use medication to speed it up. We can get people that don't have a genetic problem, we can get them over anything with therapy.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a genetic problem, we can give them a medicine that'll make it as though they don't have it.
Yeah. All right, Paul, we got some anxious callers on the line. Let's try to get to some of them. We've got Patty is calling in. Patty, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Dr. Meyer, I read your book a long time ago, Happiness is a Choice. Thank you. I have treatment-resistant depression, or they call it refractory depression. And I've tried SSRIs, SSNIs. I think I've tried, I'm on one last hope medication to try. I've tried ketamine and TMS. And so kind of hopeless. and I do,
you don't need
it
to
is,
be.
You don't I need to be. Be?
No, you don't need to be.
Oh.
When I hear the term treatment-resistant depression, what I think is that the psychiatrist was treatment-unable depression. He couldn't figure. And sometimes it is real complicated. There's a, because I've never yet met a depression that we couldn't get somebody over. You know what I mean? So there's some that are more difficult. Wow. Most people that come in, that, you know, you put them on an antidepressant 3 out of 4 times, they feel great a month later and the first one works. But I have had some where we have to try things for like 6 months. There's a gene test you can get. If you're, you know, like it can cost $4,000, but there's ways that you can get it from anywhere from $20 to $300. If a doctor knows how to finagle it a little bit for you. But there's a test you can get that shows which medications would work and which ones wouldn't work for you. And it would show whether you need a high dose or a low dose. And so like if you ended up coming to our day program, for example, we run that test on everybody and then almost for sure we'd be able to find out something that would work. And if there's things inside that are eating away at you, and there may or may not be, it may just be a genetic thing, then those would get dug out. But in the meantime, you know, we would see you every day to see what medications you've tried and what combinations you have or haven't tried. And sometimes it takes, you know, and there's some brand new antidepressants that, you know, even when the other ones haven't worked, Trintellix and Vibrid, and maybe you've tried them all already, I don't know. But there's some new ones where even if the other ones haven't worked, 6 in a row haven't worked, and we put somebody on Vibrid, then most of the time that's going to work anyway. And if it works a little bit but not good enough, we can add a little bit of Rexulti or Vraylar or one of the new dopamine medications with it, and that usually will make it work. And sometimes it takes both of those plus the Lamictal that I talked about, a GABA medicine. So sometimes it takes a little bit. You know, I feel almost like a chef when I'm helping somebody, and I love my job because I go home at the end of every day feeling like, wow, I improved the quality of a lot of people's lives today. That feels great. But I feel like a chef. If I met you and sat down with you for 60 or 90 minutes and asked you questions and saw what you tried and what symptoms you had and all that, I'd be thinking, well, let's see, she could use a touch of dopamine and a little bit of serotonin, and maybe some norepinephrine, and probably a little bit of GABA wouldn't hurt. So I try a combination that I think would fit. And if you have the genetic test, it makes it a lot easier to guess. Maybe once a year, there's somebody that I've tried everything I can think of and nothing seems to work. And there's this Jewish psychiatrist here in town who is so smart. I mean, he can visualize the pathways and say, well, let's see, if we do this, that'll affect the B6, the A2 receptor and the B1 receptor, and this will do. He can visualize those pathways and stuff. So I send them over to him, and he always figures out something. And then they can either keep seeing him, or they come back to me, and I put them on his medicine. But he always figures it out, you know. So I can figure it out 99% of the time, and he can figure out the other 1%. But treatment resistant just means you haven't gotten on the right treatment yet.
Patty, thank you so much for calling. I hope that helped. And Paul, again, I appreciate the way you've encouraged Patty.
Yeah. Don't give up, Patty.
Yeah.
You might need to get another opinion or come down here and let us.
All right. Another call on the line. This one would like to remain anonymous. Welcome to the show. You got a question for Dr. Meyer.
I do. Thank you so much for having me. My son is 27, and he was diagnosed in middle school with ADHD. He did not have the hyper type. He was the, like, inattentive type, so he kind of slid through the cracks a little bit. So yeah. I know with ADHD, depression can come in with that tandem. And he does have depression. He also has anxiety. He's had Ritalin before, and he got tired of taking it because he felt like it was becoming addictive. And then so he really cut himself off of everything, including the Zoloft he had been taking. And so now we're kind of struggling. We're trying to help him get back on something to help him. He had good success with Zoloft, but I'm wondering if you would have anything newer that might be something that would help him.
Well, if that worked for the depression and anxiety, and it usually does, it works 3 out of 4 times. If it worked, you ought to just take that again. But you can't force, you can take a lead a horse to water, my dad used to tell me, but you can't make it drink. And I've got ADD, I treat a lot of people with ADD. I've got ADD, I take Vyvanse as a really good medicine that lasts 12 hours, but for me it only lasts about 6. So in the afternoon I take an Adderall, they both work great for me. And Ritalin works great too for most people, and it's not addicting. You'd have to take, the doses that we're allowed to give are not at all addicting. I've never met anybody that's addicted to ADD meds.
And you know what?
If he was buying it on the street and taking 5-10 times the amount, then he could have been. But
he wasn't. But he was. I think it was Adderall. I might have misspoke. And so you said it's called Vyvanse that you take.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And Adderall, but Adderall, Ritalin, Vyvanse, all those are all just wonderful. They work great. When I sometimes I'll get to work and I'll be plodding along, getting my charts ready, and I'll think, wow, I'm really slow today. And I call my wife up and say, can you see if I took my medication this morning? And she'll like to say, no, you forgot. And so I carry some extra Vyvanse or Adderall here in my office. And then I take one, and 20 minutes later, man, I'm plugged. I get twice as much done on my ADD medicine as I do without it. And that's because I inherited ADHD. And I'm glad I did. It makes me more able to do multiple different things, bored if you're just doing the same thing all the time. So that's why I do radio, write books, do TV, and do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, because I'm ADD.
Right.
I'd use my ADD to help me. It's a blessing.
Okay, and so do you know anything about EMDR therapy?
Yeah, some people, I don't know a whole lot about it, but we've got some therapists that do it, and it seems to work. I prefer just old-fashioned, talking to people and getting them to get in touch with their feelings and insight things. But EMDR does help some people who had severe trauma. Somehow, I thought it was all hogwash when it first came out, but there have been some research studies that some people who have a lot of trauma in their past, like sexual abuse or things, it can help it come out and things like that.
Okay. Well, I'll encourage him. He's actually going to get his Zoloft refilled, so I'm really grateful for that.
If he gets back on Zoloft, it takes a whole month for it to work fully. You feel 25% less anxious and depressed each month, and at the end of a month, if he feels pretty good but not great, then if the doctor would go up on the dose, he'd probably feel great a week later. If it doesn't help at all, then I would try a different antidepressant. But that Zoloft's a great one, and it's the most commonly used one for women who are pregnant.
Thank you so much for the call. We do need to take a little break. Dr. Paul Meyer is my guest. If you have a question about any kind of mental health issue, maybe it's anxiety, depression, well, let us know. 877-933-2484. We've got some people waiting patiently. We'll get you on right after the break. We're having a great hour with Dr. Paul Meyer. You know him from his books and his reputation. He's an MD, a psychiatrist, ordained minister, and kind of does it all. And I'm just learning about his ADHD, which helps him do lots of things well and fast. And you kind of seem, Paul, to be harnessing that gene to your advantage.
Yeah, I think God uses our, and the Bible says that he uses the foolish to confound the wise, and he uses the weak to show that he's the one that's strong. So I don't mind talking about, medications that I take myself because of my own genetic problems, because if I felt any better, I'd feel guilty.
Yeah. Another question came in from a listener. What is the role of sex and depression on the brain in regards to the production of serotonin?
Oh, sex?
Mm-hmm. And depression.
Well, God created sex, and I know it makes married people happy. happy married couples who have a good sex life they are. I mean, Christian couples, for example, because a lot of psychiatrists think, you know, Christianity is crazy and stuff, and but when they do research on it, there's been a lot of research on it. Then the couples that are the happiest in the United States, they're at least 20% happier are Christian couples, and they've done research on their sex lives, and they actually have Christians have a better sex life than non-Christians do, and so sex doesn't really produce serotonin, I don't think, but if you have a good sex life with somebody that you're married to that you love deeply, then I think the joy that you have, you know, can help you feel better. We build up serotonin at night while we're sleeping, and so I don't think sex really builds up serotonin, but it is involved with dopamine, though.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a chemical called dopamine. That's the pleasure chemical.
Mm-hmm.
And when people do have marital sex, then dopamine is released, and that's a chemical that does make you happier. So it's not serotonin, but it is, you know, now that I think of it, it is a chemical that makes life happier.
Yeah. If you have a question on mental health issues, let us know what it is. We've got time for maybe another call or two, or a text, 877-933-2484. Paul, when you talk about getting on an antidepressant, that doesn't produce any happy chemicals in your brain, does it? I think the last time we chatted,
what it does is
it prevents the chemicals that your brain already produces from going away too quickly.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. It doesn't put any false happy chemicals in your brain, and a happy person that took it couldn't get any happier because his serotonin is already normal. But somebody who's got a low serotonin level and they take one, it blocks some of the drain so that it can accumulate. And when it gets up to a normal level, then they're as happy as they would have been if they wouldn't have inherited those reuptake sites that suck up too much.
So, Paul, why would Christians be all a flitter on taking a antidepressant when it really does help you hold on to what you have versus having it dissipate too quickly and leaving you feeling down and discouraged and hopeless?
I think part of it is just part of it's pride, because it's okay to have diabetes and take insulin. It's okay to have low thyroid and take thyroid medicine. But if there's a brain chemical, then people are embarrassed to say so. You know, that's one thing. But another thing is there's a lot of people that have spiritual problems that are causing them to be anxious and sad, and that run to their doctor and get on an antidepressant or anxiety medicine and just numb it without getting Christian counseling to work on it. And so I think some pastors and other people see a lot of people in our society that run to medication to solve their problems rather than working on them. And so that gives medicine a bad rap, you know, but that you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Because again, like you were just saying, some people inherit that. An example really quick is there was a lady that came all the way from Jerusalem to be treated at our day program, who was a Messianic Jew. She was, mm-hmm. she was a Christian. And all her life, she had a low serotonin level, so low that she was suicidal her whole life.
Oh, boy.
She had to count things. She had to check the doors 4 times a night. Whatever she did, she'd have to touch things a certain number of times before she could do it and stuff. But somehow she made it through college and became a social worker, but was just miserable. And so she came here, and I put her on a Zoloft or something like that, a serotonin medicine. And a month later, she, for the first time in her life, she was totally normal. She was happy. She was at peace. All those obsessive compulsive things were gone, but she went back to her church in Israel, and the church was one of those churches that thought you should do everything just with Bible reading and prayer, and mm-hmm. they had to get off the medicine. So when she got off it, it all came back, and she hung herself and died.
I'm so sorry. Oh, boy, now, that's terrible.
To resolve that, the church ended up contacting me and talking to me, and I told them, you know, what they did. They meant well, but, you know, they accidentally killed her, you know, but... and now they hand out copies of Blue Jeans, you know, if somebody has mm-hmm. a problem where they do need medication. And she inherited a low serotonin level.
Wow.
Easy to fix, but they, you know, you can't just you know, not everybody gets cured by using the Bible. But the Bible is, I mean, I, like I said, I've been reading it every day since I was 10, and it's fantastic, and it heals all, it can heal any of our problems. But God allows some of us to inherit problems that it doesn't heal.
Mm-hmm. All right, give an anonymous caller. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Dr. Meyer. Hello? Hello? I guess not. All right. Here's a question, Paul. I've been using SSRIs for years, and I have night sweats from them. Other meds don't help as well, so I take minimal SSRIs so that the sweating isn't so bad. If I take a higher dose, I feel better, but I can't sleep due to the sweats. Any suggestions?
Oh, yeah, there's some that won't cause sweating, so you could keep trying. And also, I'm trying to look it up on my computer right now while I'm answering you. There's a medication that you can take that real easy that you take with the antidepressant, and you won't sweat.
Nice.
This person says
they're also using Lamictal, but still experiencing depression.
Yeah, Lamictal helps most of the anxiety. Well, here it is, sweating. Night sweats. Let's see. There's a medicine called terazosin, and I just learned about it like a few months ago, so it must be fairly new. But T-E-R-A-Z-O-S-I-N. It's actually a blood pressure medication. You just get a milligram tablets from your psychiatrist, or even your family doctor could order that, and you take one of those every night, and it gets rid of the night sweats.
Boy, that's pretty swell.
You can stay on whatever dose you want of your antidepressant that works the best, and take that with it, and you won't sweat.
Mm-hmm. That's hopeful. Another caller was wondering, Paul, for people that are dealing with chronic illness, do you partner with medical doctors that they're working with to make sure your medication doesn't mess with something else that they're taking?
The medicines I give mix with anything, so there's nothing that they could take that would be a bad match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but still, yeah, we still look it over, and they, you know, we get a list of everything they're on and stuff, but there's nothing that it would be a bad match with.
Mm-hmm. So God made our brains in a pretty amazing way, and he designed us to want to have good health. And so a combination of spiritual, biological, we need to pay attention to everything, don't we?
Yeah, and 80% of people, all the chemicals in their brain work just fine.
For 80%?
But about 20% will have one chemical or another. And I take a couple different medications, you know, like ADD medicine, and I take Lamictal for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, when I got on it, you know, a dozen years ago or something like that, my wife, after I was on it for a few weeks, you know, my wife said, "Paul, I really love you on 200 milligrams a night of Lamictal, but I love you more on 300. I'm a pretty nice guy anyway. I'm pretty easy going.
Yeah, I know that.
She can pretty much, you know, ask me for anything. I'll say, yes, dear. You know?
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you coming back on the show, Paul. We missed you for a while. I know you were busy with all kinds of stuff, but I would love to have you back on again. As you know, you're a delight, and the listeners love you, and I got another half dozen questions with people I'm not going to be able to get to.
Yeah, you're a delight. I really enjoy doing these programs with you, Bill.
Well, thank you so much. So that all the time we have today. Big thanks to Dr. Paul Meyer for being such an amazing guest. We're going to let you know that if you missed any of today's show, just head back to myfaithradio.com. You can check it out. And I will save these questions for next time Dr. Meyer comes on. Thank you for calling in and sending in such great questions. And have a great night. As you lay your head on the pillow, just know God's working out his great plan in your life. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.